ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 14, Text 8. Tamas Twagyana Jang Vidhi Mohanang Saravadehinam Pramadalasya Nidrabhis Tannibadnati Bharata Tamas Twagyana Jang Vidhi Mohanang Saravadehinam Pramadalasya Nidrabhis Tannibadnati Bharata. Translation: O son of Bharat, know that the mode of darkness born of ignorance is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. Purport: in this verse, the specific application of the word tu is very significant. This means that the mode of ignorance is a very peculiar qualification of the embodied soul. The mode of ignorance is just the opposite of the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, by development of knowledge, one can understand what is what. But the mode of ignorance is just the opposite. Everyone under the spell of ignorance becomes mad, and a madman cannot understand what is what. Instead of making advancement, one becomes degraded. The definition of the mode of ignorance is stated in the Vedic literature. Vastu yathatmya jnanavakaram viparyaya jnana janakam tamaha. Under the spell of ignorance, one cannot understand a thing as it is. For example, everyone can see that his grandfather has died, and therefore he will also die. Man is mortal. The children that he conceives will also die. So death is sure. Still, people are madly accumulating money and working very hard all day and night, not caring for the eternal spirit. This is madness. In their madness, they are very reluctant to make advancement in spiritual understanding. Such people are very lazy. When they are invited to associate for spiritual understanding, they are not much interested. They are not even active like the man who is controlled by the mode of passion. Thus, another symptom of one embedded in the mode of ignorance is that he sleeps more than is required. 6 hours of sleep is sufficient, but the man in the mode of ignorance sleeps at least 10 or 12 hours a day. Such a man appears to be always dejected and is addicted to intoxicants and sleeping. These are the symptoms of a person conditioned by the mode of ignorance. Tamastvagyana jang vidhi mohanang saravadehinam pramadalasya nidrabhis tannibadnati bharata. O son of Bharat, know that the mode of darkness born of ignorance is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. In describing these characteristics of the mode of ignorance, Krishna says there, madness, indolence, and sleep. But actually, these are practically madness is practically synonymous with the mode. All of these qualities, they're synonymous. Just like you would say, the quality of a cow is that it has horns and a dewlap and a hump if it's an Indian cow. And so the characteristics are inseparable from the entity. So these madness, pramad, alasya, indolence, and sleep, these are all, they practically you can say that is the mode of ignorance. Madness, I specifically want to speak about this today because it's a vital subject, because the whole world that we live in is mad. I thought that when I was young, means in this body, the whole world is mad. Is it me or is it everyone else? Or is it all of us? It seems the whole world is crazy, but I don't know if I'm sane. This was a common syndrome in the Western world in the mid-1960s to mid-1970s. Maybe before that also, but it came quite prominent. In the people just thought everything's mad, and their response was to adopt another kind of madness, the hippiness. So that was another kind. Srila Prabhupada thought that was more mad than the general madness. Their response to the madness was to become more mad. So they didn't know what the solution is. They just became mad in a different way. And actually, among the hippies, if you're really crazy, the more crazy you are, or the more display of craziness they show, that was considered prestigious. In the town I lived, there was a hippie called Mad John, and he was prestigious because he'd earned by his activities, by his sadhana in hippiness, he'd earned the title Mad John. So this is an important subject. Everyone is mad in this world. The mode of ignorance dominates this world. It's the world of ignorance. We're in this world because of being in ignorance. So it's the predominating characteristic of this world. Everyone is in ignorance. Agyana timirandhasya. We're all born into ignorance. Srila Prabhupada translates tamas, tamaha, or tamas as ignorance, the mode of ignorance. So in the mode of ignorance, one is ignorant even of one's material self-interest. What to speak of spiritual? Just Prabhupada says, it's just the opposite of the mode of goodness. It's complete delusion. Mohanam saravade. Yes, it's the world of ignorance. Mohanam saravadehinam. It literally means that the mode of ignorance places into illusion everyone who has got a body. That means everyone in this world. So it is the mode of the ignorance is the characteristic of this world. Srila Prabhupada narrated an anecdote from Allahabad in his Grihastha days. There was an incident in the court where a psychologist was called. There was a plea on the behalf of the accused, and presumably in a criminal case. A criminal case means there's accused of innocent due to being mad. So, in other words, it's admitted that he did the act for which he was accused, but he's innocent because he's mad. So a psychologist was called to examine him, and the psychologist came in the court to give evidence and said, "Yes, I've examined him, and according to my analysis, he's mad, but then I've analyzed many people throughout my career, And from what I can see, everyone in the world is mad. And if you like, you can excuse him on those grounds. In other words, he's telling the judge, you're also mad. Everyone else is mad. The whole world is mad. So, madness or insanity is another term. It's a less gross term, you could say, but it means the same thing. What's the euphemistic term used in modern medicine? Psychological disorder. But there's neurosis, psychosis. Roughly, you could say neurosis is a mental disturbance and psychosis is serious. Is that it? So psychosis is the modern word for madness. Would you say that, doctor? Trained as a doctor. So it's a very big topic in the modern age. The madness seems to be increasing, or maybe people are just more aware of it. It's a very big topic. People generally don't want to admit to being, if they have a mental disturbance, although everyone has. It's a very big, I gave that example that Srila Prabhupada gave from the law court, so in jurisprudence or the study of law, it's a big topic. What constitutes insanity? It's a common plea, or a plea on the grounds of insanity or diminished responsibility. That's another term used in British law. It means not really insane. That lets you off, but at the same time they don't stick you in the mental hole. Good one if you can get away with that. Diminished responsibility. They might just put you on a course of drugs. It's a big topic in jurisprudence because in law, if you're going to let someone off for insanity, you're going to have to define what is insanity, and they can't define it. It's very difficult to define. What is exactly insanity? The study of the mind has become a major topic in the modern world. Mukhyamana Vishayam, that means the major topic. I said a major topic. There's a difference. A major topic means it's one of several important topics. The major topic means the most prominent. So, I think people are more interested in sex and sports than they are in psychology. There are other things which are more important in people's minds. But it's become a major topic. The pioneering work of Sigmund Freud, who's another nutcase, he opened up the field of psychotherapy. But actually, it seems that he had some internal psychological stability himself, some kind of, despite his infatuation with the subject of sex. He died from cancer in the mouth due to excessive tobacco use. And he took it very stoically. That he wasn't disturbed, and even though he didn't show outward signs of disturbance. So he's a muni among the madmen. So it's a major topic in the modern world. I read somewhere that in modern America, throughout in the course of their lives, 70% of the people will either seek or be committed to psychiatric help. They're all crazy. So the mind has become a major topic. Madness means mental disturbance. But madness, as it's discussed in modern secular terms, It deals with mundane paradigms of sanity and insanity. But from the Vaishnava perspective, it's all insane. From the Vaishnava perspective, the mad people are mad and the normal people are mad also. Here in Bhagavad Gita, there's quite some discussion of, there is discussion of mad, just like here, pramada, the word pramada. And the whole discussion of the mode of ignorance is the one of madness. Early in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the bewilderment of the living being. Here we see mohanam sarvadehinam. So how that comes about, Krishna describes, dhyayato vishaya pungsang sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho bhijayate krodhad bhavati sammoha sammohat smriti vibhrama smriti bhrangshad buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyati. It starts off with the innocent, might seem, thinking about sense objects. And it gets worse, step by step. It's like a horror story, but everyone lives out in their life. So, well, let's change it to a love story. A love story. Let's have a nice love story. A movie. Young boy looks at a young girl. The young girl looks at the young boy, and they fall in love. And that's the beginning of all the problems. So and then they're thinking about each other. So that's thinking of the sense object. You become attached. And then your desire, becomes very strong. And from that, inevitably comes frustration, either the, in various ways. Mundane lust leads to frustration, as in the case of men and women, or boys and girls, when they join together, it always produces suffering, one way or the other. Even if the husband and wife are compatible to a large extent, the very enterprise of joining together man and woman means there are children, and that causes entanglement, and you have to work, and it's a big headache. And if there are not children, that's also a cause of suffering, because people want to have children. So either you have children and it's suffering, or you don't have children and it's suffering. And in cases where the marriage doesn't work out so well, then, there's all kinds of suffering. They join together and they think everything will be so nice, and then in the whole literature of the world is full of this subject, of the various ways in which the material life, or man-woman relationships, they result in, it starts off with hope and ends in disappointment, frustration, so many ways. As I was sitting in a doctor's office the other day, I picked up a book and saw how the woman is telling a story. On my marriage day, I couldn't believe how I was so lucky to marry such a wonderful man. Did you see that also? No. And then towards the end of the evening, after the marriage, where is he? She couldn't find him. And she's looking here and looking there, and she looks in a room and finds him having sex with her best friend, girl. And that's the beginning of, anyway, and it goes on. So, unfaithfulness, infidelity is one cause of suffering. One of the, there's so many ways. One of the partners might go insane. Happened with my mother. Now you know why I'm insane. So that causes suffering. So many ways. It causes suffering, and then you become frustrated. So, krodha, anger, krodha, bhavati. So from anger, one's sammoha. It means one becomes bewildered. So that's there in anger. When one is in anger, one is, you just can't think in a manner that is conducive to the well-being of oneself or others, and just lose all sense of what you're doing. That's why also in law sometimes that's also considered that if it's a non-premeditated murder, you just lose your temper. That's also considered mitigating. That if you plan a murder and then you execute it cold-bloodedly, you're going to get, it's considered worse than if on the spur of the moment you just lose your temper and kill someone. Because it's accepted that in anger you lose control of your intelligence. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, sammoha sounds pretty bad, but it gets worse, vibhrama. Then you become even more confused, and it goes on. Then you come to a stage where your whole intelligence is permanently spoiled. It's just like if you get angry, you may become bewildered, then you cool down. But if you get to a stage where you're just so out of sync with reality that your intelligence is always spoiled. So that's the situation. This is the situation of madness in the material world. Here in Bhagavad Gita, madness is mentioned, but it's not defined. There are in more detail. Definitions are there in Shastra, in Srimad Bhagavatam. Nunang pramata. Pramata is a word for madness. Mata means madness, and that's often prefixed with pra to make pramata or unmata, which means it's an intent, both of them intensify. So it means quite mad, completely mad. So nunang, and then nunam also means certainly, so it intensifies it even more. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. And it's spoken by Rishabhdev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there should be no doubt about it at all. Nunang pramata kurute vikarma. Yad indriya pritya aprinoti na sadhu manye yata atmano yam asannapi klesha da asadeha. It's a very understandable definition of madness. That people perform sinful activities which will cause them to get more bodies with more suffering in future. This is madness. And then again, just shortly after that, Rishabhdev says, he gives the reason why people act in such a mad way, or the underlying cause. He says that people are certainly defeated as long as they are abodhajata, as long as their real intelligence doesn't awake. That real intelligence awakes when one starts to inquire into the nature of the self and reality. And if one doesn't do that, then one is left on the platform of illusion and trying to enjoy the senses. So this subject is analyzed in some detail in Srimad Bhagavatam. Jarabharat's instructions to Rahugana are very instructive on the nature of the mind in conditioned life. Suhotra Swami wrote a book, Vedanta Psychology. If he was still here now, I would have asked him to expand it more. You could say it's an introductory study. It's a field which someone should get into, a devotee should get into and promote Vedic psychological study, because it's a very big subject of interest in the modern world. It'd definitely be popular in Russia. People are really into, we're really into psychology in Russia. It's like a big thing. People are really into it. It's a national, in America people are into it, but it's as an individual need, but it's in Russia it's like a mainstream subject of conversation among more intellectual people, and that often mixes with their ideas of mysticism. And anyway, it's Russia. If you go there, you'll understand. Maybe. I didn't understand yet myself. Madness. We're discussing about madness. First of all, we should define what madness is. Well, first of all, we should understand what is sanity, because insanity is defined in relationship to sanity. It means a condition of not being sane. Just like an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God, and poor old Richard Dawkins is trying to find out some other term, but there's no other way to define it. He's so much against the concept of God that he doesn't even want to be called an atheist, because there's a concept of God there. So anyway. They've tried humanists and all this kind of thing. So, what does it mean to be sane? Well, that we'll find from Bhagavad Gita. Sane means to understand who, the first thing should be who one is. Who am I? And Srila Prabhupada often pointed this out. Who is crazy? He made a pamphlet. Because devotees in the Western world often found themselves confronted by people saying, "You're crazy." They're jumping around in the streets in bed sheets and bald heads and some little bit of hair, jumping up and down at the back and singing and ringing bells. "They're crazy. They must be crazy. They're not like me. They must be crazy." So who is crazy? And Srila Prabhupada pointed out that who is crazy? If you don't even know who you are, then you're crazy. People think, well, I'm this body, but then understand from Bhagavad Gita teachings, we're not the body. Before the body existed, I existed. After this body finishes, I will continue to exist. So to identify with this body is crazy. So there's a very good definition of craziness. If you don't know who you are, if someone walks in here and says, "I am the Prime Minister of India," if he's any of the, how many people in this country? 130 crore, something? 13? I don't know, how are we going? 130 crore. 130 crore. If he's anyone except the actual Prime Minister and walks in and says that, then you can know he's crazy. Should I tell the Nehru joke? It's always a good joke. You know that one? I've told it a few times. I heard it from Atmatattva. That once, I don't know if it's a true story, but Pandit Nehru, you've all heard his name. You all went to school in India. He, for some reason, was visiting a mental institution. Maybe he was opening it or something. That's the kind of thing that he would have liked to do, because in India they didn't usually have such things, and he liked to have all modern things, like mental institutions, Western things. So he was in the mental institution, and he asked a man, "Who are you?" And he gave his name, and the man asked him, "Who are you?" And he said, "Well, I'm Pandit Nehru, the Prime Minister of India." And the man said to him, "Don't say that. I said that, and I ended up in here." So if you don't know who you are, if you think you're something else, then you're a madman. But we're all madmen. We're all in the thinking that we are this body, and we are not. So that's the Vedantic definition of madness is to not know who we are. And actually that includes the so-called Vedantists who think that Brahmasmi aham, and that's all. I am Brahman, without any further definition. They're nirvishesh. They don't have a specific definition of who they are. They only have a non-specific definition. So that's also madness. Just like you, if someone asks, who are you? I'm a human being. And you don't know anything more than that. That's some kind of madness. So if you say, I am Brahman, but you don't know anything more than that, it's true you're Brahman, but if you don't know anything more than that, then you're in the same position as someone who says, I'm a human being. Well, could you give us a few more details? No. Well, how are you different from me? I'm not. I am you and you are me and we are all together. Madness. But in the modern world, even though they have such a predilection with psychology, they can't specifically define what is madness because they can't specifically define what is sanity. Just like in America, someone may see devotees dancing in the street and say they're crazy. And in India, if you do that, many people say, oh, they're very great saintly people. So, is madness or sanity culture specific? There might be some theories like that. What does it mean to be sane? Well, where are we going here? One definition of madness is just like that given in Bhagavatam, to perform sinful activities which cause one to suffer in future. So one definition of madness. Oh, I should get back to that point. Why can't they define what is sanity and insanity? Because they don't know the base. They're concerned with the mind, but the mind rests on consciousness, and consciousness is the symptom of the soul. So they can never know because therefore they think that the mind is something material. It's when there's a certain combination of chemicals which make a body and form a brain, then there is consciousness. And so sometimes they think that psychological disorders are simply malfunctions of the brain. But there must be some organisms, there must be plenty of organisms that don't have brains, right? They don't have brains at all, but they still have intelligence. Microscopic organisms. Anyway, it's a complex subject, but neuropsychology. And there appears to be some credence to that, because you can give, if someone has a psychological disorder, there are certain drugs that you can, chemicals, which you can give, which mitigate the symptoms. They may not cure the disease, the mental disease, but it can mitigate the symptoms. Just like if someone is hyperactive, you can give them a sedative or a soporific. And that will calm them down. But it doesn't solve the problem. A few years ago, there was an experimenter in neuropsychology, and he would give electric impulses to different regions of the brain. And he found that by doing that, he could stimulate hunger, sexual appetite, fear, hatred. So it would seem that it's all these emotions, that the consciousness is simply dependent on the brain. He also found that by stimulating certain parts of the brain, that people could have religious experiences and feel that they're seeing God. The name of the experimenter was Ramachandran, Indian origin. And he said that this, people might say that, well, God's just a facet of the brain function, right? You might think that's proof that there's no God. If you can stimulate experience of God by stimulating part of the brain. But he said that, well, maybe that's proof that there is God, because by stimulating different parts of the brain, you stimulate sensations which are connected with phenomena that we accept to be real. Hunger is based on a real need for food. Sexual appetite is based on the animalistic instinct for uniting with a member of the opposite sex. So he said, well, the very fact that means that the brain, if it's stimulated like that, it simulates the state in which people have an experience of God. There's something there in the brain. If it was something completely unreal, he said it could be argued either way. It doesn't mean that there's no God. And the explanation given by Vedantic psychologists is that the brain is an instrument of the consciousness, which is symptomatic of the soul. Just like if you have a TV and you're watching India versus Australia test match, you're sitting here in Salem and the test match is going on in Delhi. So you can brighten the reception, so you see a brighter screen. Doesn't make any difference to what's going on in Delhi at the test match. Or you can increase the sound, so you hear the crowd woo, ah, ah, louder, or you can decrease it also. But it doesn't make any difference to what's going on in Delhi. Or maybe the transmission will become disturbed and you get all noises and lines on your screen. I presume that still happens. I don't watch TV when I used to. Back in the early 1970s, that used to happen, especially when there were broadcasts from the other side of the world. I don't know if it still happens. But the fact that the transmission is disturbed doesn't mean that the original phenomenon is affected in any way. So in the same way, the brain is the instrument of, this is the Vedanta expression, the brain is the instrument of the mind. So by stimulating the brain in various ways, you can produce apparent differences in consciousness. Just like the TV, you can make the, even though it might be a dark day in Delhi, overcast, you can make it look like it's a sunny day by adjusting the, I'm going like this. I think they do it by pressing buttons nowadays. So the underlying consciousness may get expressed in various ways, and that may be adjustable via the brain. But it doesn't mean that the brain is the source of consciousness. And there are some cases of people who don't have brains. They have an empty hole in their head. And they function normally, as normal as normal can be. So that's another whole topic. But I'm just discussing here some of the difficulties in discussing what is sanity and what is not sanity. So one definition of madness is to act contrary to one's own self-interest. Isn't that mad? For instance, if you just start cutting your body with razor blades, a mad person might do that. That's the kind of thing that a mad person... This person's committed to a mental institution. Why? Because he started slashing his body with a razor blade, severely injuring himself. So he's in here. But, as Bhagavatam points out, everyone does that. by not being Krishna conscious and by performing sinful activities. And even on the mundane platform, many people do that. What about smoking? How about that? In patriotism, person may go out and sacrifice his life. How does he benefit? He may say, I'm benefiting my countrymen, but he doesn't benefit by getting his head blown off in Kargil or whatever. So, even on the mundane platform, people do that. Another way of viewing madness is as a perception of reality that is very different to that of the vast majority of people. That if just like that example I gave, if you go on the street chanting and dancing in America, some people may say you're crazy. In India, some people may also say you're crazy, but they may say, oh, they're very pious people. So if you act differently to others, people may just say you're crazy because they just can't relate to it. So if, for instance, if in a sober middle class suburb in merry old England and a bunch of Jamaicans move in and they start doing this, what's that called? Brazilians do that. Samba music, reggae Jamaicans do. And they do that all night. And other people say, they're crazy. Because we never saw people acting like that. In that book, Ridha Prabhu wrote that book about South Africa, Prabhupada in South Africa. He said one devotee, Gokulendra, he was a white-bodied devotee from South Africa. And when he first went to England, he was shocked because he saw white men digging the road. In South Africa, only the Africans do that. The whites supervise them. So if we see something different, we think it's crazy. But it's just different why people think and act in different ways. That example I gave of the Jamaicans moving in, that's an example from the 1970s because now people are used to it. And they have laws also that you can't just play your bongo drums all night long. So if we can't understand someone, we often say, it's just easy to say they're crazy, that's all. They're just, it's crazy. I often find that among devotees also. You say to someone, that, well, such and such said this, he's crazy. And if you say they're crazy, that means, well, you don't even bother considering what they say. They're just crazy, that's all. They may have something good to say, but if you write them off as crazy, and say, you see, he did this, he did that, and you can take some idiosyncrasies of his behavior, exaggerate them, and just write him off as crazy, and then that's it, finish, no discussion. So that's one way of trying to convince people. It's often used to like that to discredit people we don't understand or we don't want to understand or someone whose outlook is different. Of course, they can be crazy. It's not just by saying that someone's crazy that they're not crazy. They may be crazy also. Generally, madness refers to people who act in ways that are considered highly variant to normal. But again, that may not be crazy, just like the devotees dancing in the street. It's very variant to normal. And people may think they're crazy, but the devotees, they don't think they're crazy. What does it mean to be crazy? There's a general idea in the modern liberal ethos that you can do anything you like, however crazy it may be, as long as it doesn't harm others. And as long as it doesn't seriously harm yourself. Or if it doesn't harm yourself in ways that are considered illegal. There are some ways you can harm yourself. You're allowed to do it by law, like smoking tobacco. There are other ways you can harm yourself which are not considered legal in most Western countries, such as smoking cannabis. So it's just by their culture. Drinking alcohol is probably much more harmful than smoking. I'm not advocating cannabis, but I'm just pointing out that it's probably much more harmful to drink alcohol than to smoke cannabis, but for various reasons, cultural reasons, alcohol is probably in Turkey, cannabis is considered better than alcohol, culturally, because a lot of the stuff grows over there. The good stuff, a lot of the good stuff comes out of there, we used to say. Hashish, concentrated. So, someone who acts in a way that is highly variant to others is considered normal, but there may also be persons who are actually mad who behave very normally, and they may be some of the most dangerous people. There's a term, psychopath or sociopath, someone who acts very normally, but actually they're always calculating how to exploit people or maybe even kill people. And they win people's confidence by, they study how people behave in a way, and they study how to win people's confidence, and then they exploit them. It's quite common that men study how to win the confidence of women, use them for sex, and drop them. And it's probably quite common the other way around also, if not more common, but you only hear about one side because we're in the age of feminism. So there may be people who, some normal person may be actually mad inside. So you can't trust anyone. In a mad world, who can you trust? And it quite often happens that someone who you never suspect, they do something completely antisocial, just like you find some kid in a school goes and shoots all the other kids, or a student at college. I say, the student, well, we never expected it of him. He was very, usually they're very normal people who do this. The ones who are somewhat crazy, they're not the ones who go and shoot up others. It's the ones who are like really normal. They're the ones who get a gun and shoot a whole bunch of people dead. So be careful of the, don't be careful of the crazy people, be careful of the normal people. They're the really crazy ones. That's what I say, I saw in my childhood, I thought everyone's crazy. I used to see early in the morning, because my father's house was on the road leading to this train station for the train going into London. It's about a 20-minute drive into. So those were the days when the stereotypical British businessman had a bowler hat, a pinstripe suit, and a brolly, an umbrella. So you'd see legions of them walking down to the station. Smiles not allowed by convention. And then on the train, they'll be standing there reading, if they don't have a seat, they'll be sitting, they'd read their newspaper, and they'd all read their newspaper. They never look up. There's another convention, they never look at each other. They go on the same train with the same people every day. They never look at each other. Never smile, just read their newspaper. And I thought, wow, these are that's what they're training me up at this school to be. I'd rather be crazy. I'd rather they think them crazy than be considered normal by them. So be careful of the normal people. Be careful of the crazy people and be careful of the normal people. So, normal people are... Who are the people who go to porno sites? They're probably all normal people, right? Normal people. They hold down a job. They have a family. They have a dog at home. They're all normal people. But that's a kind of craziness, isn't it, to go to a porno site? Daydreaming. That's a kind of madness, isn't it? But that's accepted by psychologists, that almost everyone daydreams. Masturbation. So, normal people, it seems they're all mad inside. But it's when, but you have to act normal, and then if you get too mad, then you're mad. If what's inside comes outside, then you're mad. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a definition of a Vaishnava, one whose inside and outside is the same. Now that might be true of a madman also, but he didn't mean that. Of course, the highest level of a Vaishnava is to be a madman, and I might discuss this today. I was planning to do so, but I don't know. It'll be a long one, a long class. Now, here's something controversial. I suspect that within our movement there are many psychologically disturbed people who, under the cover of bhakti, are just keeping the lid on their madness. I strongly suspect that. That either by becoming a leader, they psychologically manipulate people, or by becoming a scholar, they read and read and read, but they don't really relate with people much. They're just absorbed, and their whole approach is to Krishna consciousness just like theoretical, and they won't talk with others. They'll just be absorbed in their own world, and actually have a huge amount of frustration inside, but they can't face it, and bhakti for them is a cover. And they may appear to be very saintly and withdrawn, but actually they're just crazy. And it can come out at some point. How did child abuse happen within our movement? How did that happen? What a horrible thing. There's some people with excessive, perverse lust got themselves into a position where they could be supervising children, and they used that to... The child, apart from gross child abuse, there's dealing with just like mentally torturing them. So, making them feel bad about themselves. Of course, there is some level of that in training children, or they should feel bad about things they shouldn't do, but just taking some perverse pleasure in that. So, we have to be very careful who we allow in our ashrams. It's always a risk. And sometimes you only see that when someone actually gets some position. I've often seen that a devotee, they may seem to be very nice and sweet and gentle, and they get some position and it obviously... There's the story, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, who's the story of one doctor who invented some potion. He would drink it and he'd become a different personality. So schizophrenia. So we often find that devotees are humble as long as they need to be, to protect their own self-interest or to project themselves as being good. Then they get a position, and then you can see what's inside. As the saying goes, power corrupts. Which is not necessarily true. Yudhishthira, he wasn't corrupt, he had power. He wasn't corrupt. So if the heart is clean, then power won't corrupt. But if one is internally corrupt, then having some power gives you the opportunity to project your frustration and your madness and your illicit desires on others. So you have to be very careful, and we should recognize that also. I mean, we see the gambling addiction, sex addiction, shopping addiction. I won't say it now, but I can think of one kind of addiction. It seems to me in our movement that some prominent leaders may have. If you can ask me later, I won't say it here. I'll maybe discuss it later. The devotees perceive, what is reality? Sanity we can define as, first of all, knowing who one is and acting in relation to that. Acting in relationship to reality, one's constitutional position. So, the Vaishnav understanding, which we accept as truth, Jivesvarup hoy Krishna nitya das, Krishna tatashta shakti bheda bheda prakash. Usually we just quote the first line, but two, the complete understanding is there. If you take the whole verse, the position, the constitutional position of the jiva, of course, to understand what the jiva atma is, first of all, we have to understand we're not the mind, we're not the body, we're not the brain. So the constitutional position of the jiva is to be the eternal servant of Krishna, and we have to understand this sutra jiva sarupoi Krishna nitya das. We also have to understand who Krishna is. That's also described, the other side of that. That Ekali Ishvara Krishna Arsha Britta, so both sides are there. And Krishna Tartashta Shakti. He's the marginal potency of Krishna. Shakti means he's not dull, but he's also not Shaktiman. He's not fully potent. He's subordinate potent. And Bheda Bheda Prakash is the manifest as the different and non-different from Krishna. So it's a one short verse and a lot of understanding is there. So actually for devotees, or the highest understanding of this constitutional position is to be a madman. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation from Ishwarapuri, he was given a mantra and told to chant it. Now generally one thinks we take a mantra and that relieves you from the madness of material existence. You become spiritually advanced. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went to his guru and said, Kiba mantra dila gosha, kiba tarbal, japate chak, japate mantra hoelo pagal. He said, what kind of mantra did you give me? You sure you gave me the right one? What is the effect of this mantra? What's this? You just gave me the mantra, but you didn't tell me what it's supposed to do. Kiba tarbal. What actually happened is that I became mad by chanting this mantra. Ishwarapuri said, very good. Hare Krishna Mahamantra Etor Shabhav Jejape Tar Krishna Upajai Bhav. It's the very by chanting the mantra, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, then naturally you'll have a feeling for Krishna. And when one has a feeling for Krishna, as Ishwarapuri taught to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is the result. And it wasn't just Ishwarapuri's speculation, it's right from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ishwarapuri taught this verse to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, this verse is the essence of Bhagavatam. What is that verse? Evang vrata sapriyanama kirtya jatanuraga tutta chitta uchai hasatiti rotiti gayati unmadava nrittiti lokabahya. Which means that one who has actually attained feelings for Krishna, which come about by chanting Hare Krishna, then he always likes to glorify Krishna, who he thinks Krishna is most dear to me. One who's jatanuraga, this has become an important term in Gaudiya analysis of the jataraga, jatarati, Ajatarati. These terms are very common. Gorya. Analysis of levels of advancement. So one whose feelings for Krishna, whose attachment to Krishna has actually arisen, then his heart becomes soft. And he loudly calls out, he laughs, he cries, he runs here and there, he dances, just like a madman, not caring for outsiders. This is a point. He doesn't care for outsiders. Other people will call him mad. He doesn't care. He's so far gone. A true madman is not making a show, but he really doesn't care what other things. So this is transcendental madness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Ramananda Rai, they were discussing all different topics. No one in the whole of India would discuss such topics. Even in the culture in which there was much discussion of philosophy, even Vaishnavism, Vaishnav topics, the topics that Rai Ramananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed, no one would discuss them. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after discussing, one night he said to Ramananda that, Ami ek batul, tumi ditiya batul. I'm number one madman, you're number two madman. Atev tomai amai hoi shamatu. We're both on the same platform. I'm a sannyasi, you're a shudra by outward consideration, and a vishayi, a materialist, lots of power and money. But actually we're both on the same platform. We're both madmen. We're on the same, I'm number one and you're number two, but we're on the same platform. Pilot and co-pilot. So normally devotees, they don't try to show madness. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, commenting on this section, says that there are, hearing these descriptions, there are a class of so-called Vaishnavas who deliberately try to behave madly to imitate transcendental madness. There's an example of that in Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Haridas Thakur was, there was a snake charmer, Haridas Thakur was dancing madly in love of Krishna by the music acted as, of the snake charmer, acted as an udipan, a stimulus for Haridas Thakur to dance in love of Krishna. And the people around were praising him, oh, he's in ecstasy of love of Krishna. So a brahmana who was there thought, why are they praising him? I'm a brahmana. I'll dance like that and they'll praise me too. So the brahmana started imitating Haridas and dancing in apparent ecstasy. And then the snake charmer came and beat that brahmana with a, beat him severely with a stick because he understood he was imitating. So imitation is not the real thing. Real madness means it cannot be calculated. It's just spontaneous. Devotees are mad, according to the normal way of thinking. Often, when someone takes to Krishna consciousness, their relatives and friends will say, "You're mad. Who had that experience? Congregation? No?" They'll say, "You're mad." And actually, we're mad. We're sitting here talking all these things. We spend our whole life working for something that's not real. If you work in the steel plant, they'll give you some money and you can buy some real food and you can get some real alcohol and drink it and you can get something tangible. Whereas in Krishna, this Krishna is just some, it's just some imagination. It's not real. Well, without getting into a big discussion, we can say, well, actually, we're very happy. We don't have money, but we can't buy alcohol. And we have, when you buy alcohol, you maybe once a week, and then you dance. We, without alcohol, we're dancing anyway. So if the goal of life is to be happy, we're doing better than you. We have a better formula. So better to be mad in this way than mad in that way. But in normal dealings, devotees, they tend to, we deal with people in a normal way. That Rupa Goswami also said that a Vaishnava should not be neglectful in worldly dealings. It's not that, well, I'm a devotee and so I can drive on the other side of the road. It doesn't matter because I'm mad. That kind of madness is not encouraged. One should be sane in normal dealings. One of the qualities, even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu promoted that the ultimate level of Vaishnavism is madness, he also said, quoting Srimad Bhagavatam, that one of the qualities of a devotee is apramata. He's not mad. So he's not mad in the mundane sense. Not mad. The same term comes in Srimad Bhagavatam. Nunang pramatakuru tevika. He's not mad in that sense. He's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He described the objective of Vaishnava Dharma, his ultimate aspiration. Of course, he described his ultimate aspiration in various ways, the various levels and manifestations of that. But one of them, he stated that he will consider the perfection of his life that amare bishai pagala balaya angate dibek dhuli. When materialistic people call me mad and throw dirt on me, that's it. Then I know. Now I've really made it. That's my aspiration. So madness is the objective of Vaishnavas. Premesha bhave bhakta hashe kande gayon mattohe anache iti utidai. That's the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the Bengali rendition of that. Evangrata sapriya namakit. That the very symptom of praying. Yeah, now we come to the topic of praying. Is our aspiration to be mad or the aspiration is praying? Praying? But praying means madness. Just like in material existence, tamagun means madness. It's the perverse reflection of the spiritual existence in which praying means madness. So madness is there. If you're fully Krishna conscious, you're mad. And if you're fully at the deepest ditch of materialism, you're mad. And in between what they call mundane sanity is trying to pretend that you're not mad. It's another kind of madness. So the very nature of prem is that the prem makes the devotee laugh, jump, cry, sing, dance, and run here and there like a madman. And there are many examples in the Bhagavatam itself. Rishabdev, he was king of the world, and he acted like a madman. Jarabharat deliberately acted like a madman. And he was even ready to be killed. But he just didn't want to interact with materialistic people whatsoever. Even not to the extent that he was going to be killed. But he didn't care. He determined not to interact with materialistic people. And he only did out of compassion for Rahugana. Otherwise he didn't, only when he started preaching to him, otherwise he didn't interact at all with materialistic people. The Avanti Brahmana is another example of the Avanti Brahmana was a normal person who was he became so normal that he became mad. Means he was interested in getting money. That's a normal thing. But he became so much interested, so miserly, that he had no human relationship with anyone, and people hated him. And he lost all his money, they rejected him. And then he acted like a madman, and he didn't care what people said or did, and he attained Krishna consciousness. Shukdev Goswami, fully self-realized person, walked around naked. The village people, the women and children, they thought he was mad. He didn't care. But when the great sages saw him, they immediately understood. Here is a great devotee. Then he spoke to them. He didn't speak to anyone else. But he deliberately acted as a madman. Yudhishthira Maharaj, he was a most sane person. The personality of Dharma manifest. The son of Yamaraj, Dharmaraj. Atmavaiputra, the son represents the father. So very sane person in the worldly sense and in the spiritual sense. But when he left home, he just like a madman. People couldn't recognize him. Here's the king. They wouldn't recognize him at all. Became just like a madman. In the modern age, Gorky Shaw, Vanshidas Babaji, to outward appearance, just like a madman. Even if you see the photo of Vanshidas, if you see his eyes, looks like a madman. But that is transcendental madness. That kind of madness is desirable, but not to be imitated. So, that's the aspiration, to be mad in love of Krishna. But meantime, we have to... Taking up Krishna consciousness means addressing our own madness, trying to become sane by understanding who we are and acting in that relationship. But like I said, even devotees, they can be apparently insane and they can be following all the processes. But there may be something missing at some point and they just don't... They're doing it. They're rising early, they're chanting rounds, they're doing everything. But it's just something missing, they never really grasp the point that what does it mean to be the eternal servant of Krishna? And they take the process of Krishna consciousness as being some way to prove yourself better than others or to dominate people. The process of purification never really took place. They never really surrendered. I'm thinking of some specific devotee. I mean, they're also, I can't say they're not devotees, But they may say the process of Krishna consciousness doesn't work. Well, it does work, but there are some prerequisites. One, actually, the actual humility has to be there. One thing I perceive within our movement at the present time, there's a very common misperception of equating humility, the transcendental quality of humility in which one is completely surrendered to Krishna, equating that with mundane, gentlemanly behavior. If someone's very polite and they talk in a soft voice and they deal with people nicely, these are good saintly qualities, but they do not in and of themselves constitute the humility that comes from utter surrender to Krishna. So I feel that there's a lot of emphasis on cultivating this submission to authority, which is good. All these things are good. But it should not be misunderstood in and of itself to constitute what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking about when he says, Trinadapi sunichena tarori vasahishnuna amanina amanadena kirtaniya sadaharihi. To be cultured in the worldly sense, again, it's good. But it's not the goal. That's not what we're talking about, actually. That can be another kind of contamination. Thinking that this is our goal, to be like that. But for Krishna, we may have to burn Lanka. For Rama, as Hanuman was fortunate enough to do. Arjuna wanted to be a gentleman, in the worldly sense. Krishna told him, no, you go out and be a B-A-S-T-A-R-D. In the worldly sense. You go out and be kill. Go and kill. I want to be humble. I want to be good. I want to be polite. I want to do the right thing. Go and kill. Go. All those people you don't want to kill, go and kill them. We're not asked to do that. But it just shows that the worldly conception of goodness and that of actual humility and surrender is something quite different. What does it mean to surrender to Krishna? So, madness is, it's something we have to deal with. Often people joining our movement these days, or taking to Krishna consciousness, they may be mad or mentally imbalanced, even in the mundane sense. And we have to look out for that and be careful of that. And just like you had one boy came from Ireland and he seemed to be nice for some time and then he just behaved completely mad due to psychological addiction to drugs. I don't think he was physically addicted, but it makes you crazy. So people might behave nice for some time and then they show themselves crazy. In England years ago, one man came to the temple at night and he seemed a little disturbed, but otherwise he was a nice gentleman. It's just like a young, middle-aged, what we'd call a straight English person, not the kind of person who used to come to our temple in those days. It's Bhaktivedanta Manor. So he stayed overnight, and there was one devotee who was looking after him, who was very good at looking after people. And he was there in the morning program, and it seemed maybe he's having some disturbance in his life, maybe he's having some family problem or something. But he was a very nice, gentlemanly person. And then in the Bhagavatam class, we were all sitting in the Bhagavatam class, and all of a sudden he just stood up and screamed and ran at the deities. And who knows what would have happened if the devotees hadn't jumped up and caught him. So he was just behaving normally, then mad, and then, I don't know what happened after that, he was taken away. But you phone up the 999 and they call the ambulance, and they took him away. So that was a case of someone who appeared normal, but then was seen to be so mentally disturbed that you call him mad. But that might happen, like it might happen after years, or it might be going on moment by moment, but because it can be institutionalized. People, in their madness, they might, psychologically torture their dog, or beat their dog, or something like that. But it can be institutionalized that someone's in a position of leadership and they enjoy seeing devotees suffer, and they behave with them in such a way that they make them suffer with no benefit for the person, for the devotee, not teaching him a little, but just like I heard someone said that one of my disciples told me that one of her god sisters said, "You're not following Guru Maharaj." It's just like really putting them down, not really explaining what they thought the other person was doing wrong, but just making them feel very bad. So this kind of thing, when it's done habitually, that's a kind of, there must be some term. What's that called? Madness? That's a general term. What do you call that? Behavioral disorder, when you make people feel bad. You know, you'd have to study psychology you only studied it as one of the many topics, is it? So you don't know all those terms. They're inventing all the time newer and newer psychological conditions, disorders. Yeah, so anything you do, it's abnormal. If I guess you're allowed to smile this much, but if you smile this much, then you need a drug. Careful, don't smile so much. You might need a prescription. So many people are coming who are very, they may want to practice Krishna consciousness, but they're psychologically disturbed. And if it's not dealt with, it's very difficult. People are so what are the causes? I mean, we live in a very unstable society in which lust is promoted. And remember, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajoguna Samudbhava, Mahashana Mahapam. From lust, Jayato Vishayam Pungsa, from lust everything goes down. So lust is promoted. It drives people crazy. Yes. All the time advertising, get this, get that. In the movies, they show people in huge mansions and people desire, I'd like to be that. But they can't get it. They can only daydream of it. So they become frustrated. They tell people, you're a young girl, you can conquer the world. But she can't conquer the world. So they pump you up with all different expectations. You have to become the topper in the whole of the state. But only one student's going to be the topper in the state. Top of the number one student, and all the others, they're not. So this whole competitive society promoting very high aspirations which can't be fulfilled is just setting people up to be disappointed and mentally imbalanced. Living unnatural, unregulated, stressed out lives, working in jobs that they don't want to do with people who they don't like, eating food which is full of poisons and affecting your mind, and crazy after money. I mean, some of the most respected people in the world, you could actually say they're crazy, because they have billions of dollars, but they work hard day and night to get more and more. They're some of the most respected people. Here in India, we have the Ambanis and the Hindujas, Birlas, Tatas. They've all got tons of money. They could retire and live in opulence. They could spend $1 million a day for the rest of their life and still, at the end of life, be one of the richest people in the world. But they go on working. Why? Isn't that a form of craziness? They want more. They want more. What are you going to do with it? But it's a kind of craziness, but they're respected. Oh, very great people. So the whole world is mad. That's the conclusion. And those who are the most mad, they're the most praised. Shvavidvara hoshtra karai sangstuta purusha pashuhu. Nayat karna patopeta jatu nama gadagraja. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, they praise bigger hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. If you start behaving like a dog, they'll call you mad. If you run around on four legs, people say, you're mad. He's acting like a dog. He's mad. But people are acting like dogs and hogs and camels and asses and buffaloes and donkeys. That's already said. They're mad. And the biggest one is called, oh, great person. So what's the cure? Krishna consciousness. But it has to be dispensed very carefully. Just like with any treatment, you say the medicine is there, but it has to be dispensed very carefully. You say somehow or other get people to chant Hare Krishna. No, you have to teach them how to become spiritually mad, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Hashe Prabhu kahe suno shurup ram rai ki bhabe nama loile prema upajai. He said, okay, surup Damada Ramananda Rai, now I'll tell you how to chant Hare Krishna in such a manner that prema will arise. In other words, it's not every way that you chant. This comes right after the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained the Nadhanam Najanam. No, not that. The second verse is there. Nanuragaha. I don't have taste for the holy name. And therefore, prema doesn't arise. So how does it arise? Trinadapi sunichena tarariva sahisha. So some training in that and understanding is required. It's another kind of madness to say that you just chant Hare Krishna in any way whatsoever and you'll attain prema. It's another kind of madness. Not to give the whole package. So just chant Hare Krishna. But there's sadhu sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavad Shravan, It's not only the holy name, it's a whole package. If anything's missing, then it won't be complete and perfect. So, Hare Krishna. That's how Sahotra Swami used to end classes often. Remember? He'd say, Hare Krishna. He'd say like that. He was also considered crazy by some. I said to him once that some devotees say you're crazy, and I think so also, but it's a good kind of craziness because you just realize everything in the world is mad, and our movement's also mad, but not in the right way, and therefore you can't relate. Just like we joined this movement because we couldn't relate with the world, but then when you see the movement becomes like the world and they have all the same prestige and not surrender to Krishna and mix up, but then he couldn't relate with that at all. So I called him. He told me also that he was practicing Taekwondo, Tai Chi, under that Murari in Mayapur. You know him? He's a martial arts guy from Australia. Devotee. So Sahotra Swami told me that my instructor told me that my chi is very strong, means like pran. He's got very lot of physical and psychic energy, but your balance is completely off. And he told me that's me. That's a complete description of is that he is one of the most underrated devotees in our movement. But that was his experience. It was like very strong energy, very full, a lot of energy, but imbalanced. So imbalance can also... In Tai Chi, balance means not just... Like you have to do... Anyway, if you know what it is, you know what it is. I don't know much what it is. But that's why Murari wanted to teach it to him. Because if you... By teaching that, he thought he could become more balanced personality-wise also. So that's also a possibility. Such things may be, just like you may take some pills to adjust some malfunction in the brain. So other processes also in the Netherlands, so I read, that people with mental disorders, it's a common thing, they're sent to do gardening. And that's considered to be very good for mental disorder. There are lots of tulips in Holland, right? Famous for tulips. Tulips is a kind of flower. So far they didn't grow it in India. They still have cows there, or they sent them all off somewhere else? Don't see them. They're all, because they have Edam cheese and Goda, what's the other one? Goda cheese? There are two cheese. Edam is very famous. So, among devotees also, there may be some scope for that. Such things, just like we regulate our diet. If you have a cold, then you don't eat sweets, for instance. In Western medicine, they won't tell you that. In Ayurveda, they tell, don't eat sweets. Sweets increases cough. Okay, so... Another rambling class, more or less on the subject of madness, madly going off in different directions. Another mad lecture. Hare Krishna, any sane questions, mad questions? What's the difference between a sane question and a mad question? Sane question is in relation to Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
And Guru Maharaj, my question is, Prabhupada many times mentioning we should not be satisfied in spiritual life, otherwise we become stagnant.
Srila Prabhupada said that we should not be satisfied in spiritual life, otherwise we become stagnant. Yeah. A better word, which it's one kind of satisfaction, is complacency. We should not become complacent. We should be satisfied but not complacent. Satisfied means that I'm very satisfied to be in devotional service. I'm very happy to be here. But not complacent. That, yeah, I've done enough. I'm doing well and I don't have to try anymore. So on one hand, we are satisfied. But on the other hand, we're not satisfied.
So my question is about the mind. So
about the mind.
Yeah, about the mind, because sometimes the mind can also become complacent. And my question is, what you have to do if the mind is pushing you always, and now sleeping 5 hours and wasting my time and asking more, and then you reduce sleep.
Well, you're giving the answer in your question, to push yourself always. And if we're in the association of devotees, they'll push us also. That's the danger when you become a sannyasi. You're pushing others, but there's no one around to push you. A lot of the time, not all the time. They're pulled more. Yeah, sannyasis are pulled more, not pushed so much. Come here, come here, come here. Good observation. Yes?
My name is Kumar. I'm only 9 months into Krishna consciousness. I went to temple and Chennai is gone. To do a car puja, I said, take puja. One devotee was talking to me, and I said that we are practicing. All the food restrictions, all the four restrictions. My wife is chanting 16 grams a day.
What is the actual yardstick?
What is the yardstick for a grihastha?
What is the yardstick for a grihastha? It's a bit off question, off subject here. Well, the yardstick for everyone, as you were told, is to do it with devotion. Whether you're a grihastha or sannyasi or whatever. It's not just no, counting is also important. Because, as I quoted in the lecture, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra Eto Shabhav Jai Jape Ta Krishna Upajai Bhav, that by chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, feelings for Krishna will arise. So it's required that we do. Quantity is required. First quantity, then quality will come. Hare Krishna.